Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the City Council meeting, City of Arroyo Grande. This will be our City Council and Redevelopment Agency meeting this evening, Tuesday, October 9th. Roll call.
Council Board Member Costello.
Here.
Council Board Member Guthrie.
Here.
Council Board Member Fellows.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Vice Chair Arnold.
Here.
And Mayor Chair Ferrara.
Here as well. Item 3 is our flag salute, and we're privileged this evening to have Bob Lund from the Village Improvement Association, who will lead us in the flag salute. If you would please remain standing for our invocation. Pastor Robert Banker is here from the Open Door Church of Oceano.
Please face the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Pastor. And Bob, before you sit down, you above all people should know the drill. We would like to know a little bit about what Village Improvement Association is doing. And also, I understand that you have a presentation as well.
I do. First of all, what we're doing is coming up next, of course, is Halloween in the Village, followed by Christmas. And we have a lot of activities planned. But I really want to share with you this evening something that's very special to me and to our city, and that is a celebration of all of our efforts for Arroyo Grande in Bloom. We started out the end of last year entering into a competition called America in Bloom, and we were pitted against 3 other cities of the same size. There were a total of 31 cities that entered into the contest throughout the nation. Most of them are clustered in the far northeast of our country. California had one entry, and it was Arroyo Grande. But we're working to change that. We'd like to see more California cities involved. However, for Arroyo Grande, considering that we only had 4 months to do this effort in this competition, we were judged in 8 categories. And in each of the categories, we were judged for municipal involvement, business involvement, commercial, and residential involvement. And I'm proud to say that of the 4 cities, we came in second to Red Wing, Minnesota, and they really deserve the win. They're a beautiful city. However, next year, we're going to win. Our award was for 3 blooms out of 5 blooms that can be given to a city, and we were given it specifically for community involvement. And so I have this plaque here, wherever the camera is, with me today that I'd like to present to the city for display in honor of our city, and it's to the thanks of people on our city staff, our council, members of our community volunteering to beautify and tidy up our whole village. And we intend to go forward with this in the future. In fact, next Saturday, we have a cleanup day. So we're meeting at Halcyon and El Camino at the Park and Ride for cleanup duty. And 2 weeks from now is Make a Difference Day, and we have 7 projects planned. So plan to meet us there again, and we're going to have at least 75 to 100 people making a difference in Arroyo Grande. Good. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. I want to add a few comments to that. First of all, I want to thank Bob Lund personally for his tireless effort in the success of the city in achieving this this award, and also the other key people of the core committee that went back to Rockford, Illinois, and participated in that ceremony. 2 of them were our staff members, Jim Bergman, one of our associate planners, and also Kevin Rocha, who's a park supervisor. They personally, as well as their staffs, participated and we're very grateful for their effort. And I also want to thank Karen Frank for all of her time and effort in donating to really make Arroyo Grande continue to be neat and tidy and beautiful. And there are some things for our business community to work on. There are some things for our residential community to work on. And we plan to get that information out as soon as we can. And Bob is absolutely right. We continue to be enthusiastic, and next year Lookout Red Wing, Minnesota. So, but we're very pleased and honored to have gotten as far as we did, first effort, and we're going to be working to make it even better. The other couple of presentations or announcements that I want to make is, first of all, prior to convening our council meeting this evening, the council was in closed session. We were discussing real property negotiations. We have no report at this time. And then the second announcement that I have to make, if those of you who are watching, particularly those of you who may be viewing at home, notice that we are without ties this evening. And it was because I was pressured and coerced by my colleagues up here. Well, not really. to make a statement, sort of a farewell to summer and a welcoming in of the fall. So this is Aloha Shirt Day. And we don't know if this is going to continue, probably not until next summer, although the Mayor Pro Tem threatens to do it next council meeting because I'm not going to be here. But at any rate, we thought we'd have some fun with this, and that's why we have on our casual attire this evening. So those of you who are wearing ties this evening are going to feel out of place, but that's okay. Okay, with that, we will move to item 6, agenda review. Move that all ordinances presented for introduction or adoption be read in title only and all further readings be waived.
So moved. Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there discussion? Hearing none. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries. That takes us to item 7, community comments and suggestions. This is an opportunity for any member of the public to come forward on items that are not published on this evening's agenda. The Brown Act restricts the council from taking any formal action on matters that are not published on the agenda. We would be interested in any of your comments, observations, announcements, suggestions, whatever the case may be. We would ask you to please honor the 3-minute rule and please address the council as a whole. Any member of the public, Lisa? Welcome.
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor Farr and members of the council. My name is Lisa Quinn. I'm here from SLO Regional Rideshare, and I'm here to tell you about two events that we have coming up in October. One is our Rideshare Week, which is an annual campaign, and I have some postcards that I'll pass out to you so you can... Rideshare Week is happening October 15th to the 19th, and we're really excited this year. We've partnered up with a local food bank, this county food bank, to highlight the fact that we spend $2,500 more on transportation than we do on our food as an average of Americans. So what we're trying to do is, with our new website, we have a commuter calculator, and we're having people go on, register with our TripLink system, which I'll get into in a minute, and that basically... shows you how to what your true developing programs for schools. And I also would like to mention that we have working with the state and federal to let people know that there's $98 million available to schools and jurisdictions for Safe Routes to School programs. So hopefully people will take advantage of that, those dollars, and also the workshops that are coming up. And people who would like more information, they can call us directly at 781-1385 or visit our website at www.rideshare.org. Thank you very much.
Lisa, before you leave, I was wondering if you happen to have some of those figures that as far as TripLink is concerned. I need to inform everyone. Lisa's been doing a tremendous job with this website, and the savings are tremendous. And I was just wondering if you could give us an indication of the success of TripLink.
I did look. I should have printed that out. So what Mayor Farrar is mentioning is we have a calculator internally that we can actually identify how many emissions we're reducing, how many vehicle miles traveled have been reduced, and the number of trips that have been actually taken. And so basically people go on to the trip calendar and enter that. To date, as far as my memory serves me, we started out in August with 500 people that we entered into the system. To date, we have tripled that number, so we're close to about 2,000 people that have entered into the system. And that we've just done a soft launch, so we're hoping that with Rideshare Week and a number of other things, it will increase. I think it's 34,000 miles that we've reduced since the inception of the program, and I don't remember offhand the number of trips. I think it depends on how many people are actually going on and entering. So these numbers actually could be more what people are doing out there. We work with a lot of employers on their incentive program, so there's an incentive to go in and actually let us know what they're doing. But I'd be happy to share that with you to have you send it out. Okay. Thank you.
I think you emailed it to me.
Yeah.
I just didn't bring it this evening, so okay. I was hoping.
And also, just so you know, on our website, we've added a great picture of the mayor at www.rideshare.org. That's about Rideshare Week. He was very gracious in being a part of our Rideshare bus last week. So he's got a great picture there. So go to our website. Thank you.
You didn't say you were going to put that on the website. Okay. Thank you. Anyone else would like to come forward?
And to think I almost didn't wear a tie. I'm coming forward on a sidewalk issue on Allen Street. I noticed that there were improvements made to Pool Street. Excuse me?
Name?
Oh, it's right. Tim Brown, 125 Allen Street in Arroyo Grande. Thank you. I noticed the recent improvements at Pool Street due to the rising of the sidewalk, and I know it's a safety issue because my son would ride over that with his bicycle with great adventure. So I'm here to again request, I made an informal request to Public Works, and now I'm making a more formal request that the city put in line with their capital improvement program two improvements on Allen Street. One is if you were looking at my home from 125 Allen, it's directly to the right. There's a parcel with a piece of sidewalk in which I saw a child act in terms of sidewalk improvement. So that's all I have to say.
Where was the first location on Allen Street?
It's, I think the address is 127. It's directly next to my home if you are facing my home from the street. And it's an old piece of sidewalk, and I physically saw someone fall and cut their face open. There was blood, everything, and it was quite traumatic for the parents.
Okay.
So thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else would like to come forward? Once again, items not on this evening's agenda.
Good evening, Mayor and City Council members of Arroyo Grande. My name is Jesse Lemus. I'm here, and I live at 1384 Mentone in Grover Beach. And I'm commenting in regards to the ban that was at Walmart about 2 weeks ago. I was trying to enjoy a peaceful, quiet night at my home, and I was subjected to the noise of that band. I can't even call it music. It was noise. Other residents, other friends of mine heard this anywhere from Charles Street to Newport 9th, Nice and South 16th, and my block. So I'm making you aware that it did travel quite a ways, and it was disturbing my peace. And that, I'm sure, would go for other family members, for families in the neighborhoods, elderly people that didn't know who to call or how to comment to someone that when you have an event, please consider the citizens and the communities, the other cities in the surrounding area, because it did affect us. Thank you.
Okay. Before you leave, the day of the event, and we apologize, bottom line, we apologize, many of our community members heard that evening, because we did make a public apology when the council meeting was televised. There was for lack of a better term, a significant glitch in our permitting process with that concert. We have since corrected that irregularity, and so that sort of thing hopefully will not ever happen again. It was one of those things that we found out the true nature of that concert when it was too late to do anything about it. And so we tried as best we could to get the word out to the neighborhoods. We even sent our police department out with flyers, and this was 2 hours before it was scheduled to start when we finally discovered the nature of it. So I want you to know, pass it on to your neighbors as well, that we do apologize for it. It was an irregularity in our permitting process that we have since corrected. So.
Okay, thank you very much, Mayor. I really appreciate that, and I will let them know. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else who would like to come forward? Okay, seeing none, we will close community comments and suggestions, and we'll move to item 8, which is our consent agenda. The consent agenda is a group of items that the council typically approves in one motion or one action, unless there is a particular item on the consent agenda that for further clarification, discussion.
Therefore, I'd like to pull 8F.
Okay. 8F. Any others?
I'd like to pull 8E.
8E. Any others? Okay. If there are no others, then I will entertain a motion to approve consent items 8A through 8F with the exception of E and F.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Okay, hearing none. Anything in there to read on those other items, Tim?
No, Mayor Farrar.
Okay, thank you. Roll call, please.
Mayor Pro Tem Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Fellows?
Yes.
Mayor Farrar?
Yes. All right, we'll go to 8E, Councilmember Guthrie.
I think that the first part of this is brought up in response to my request that we look at sort of prioritizing the work on the redevelopment code to be sure that we're implementing the general – getting the general plan fully implemented. And for the most part, I think the report's excellent. We're making good progress here. But my specific concern was related to the kinds of development plan policy decisions that end up being made in the middle of a project. And while I think that some of these priorities here do, in fact, respond to that, and as a general rule, I think there are a number of other areas. And if the short answer is that while I'm okay with this direction here, I do think we at the very least want to move the CEQA guidelines regarding thresholds of significance up into the higher priority level. We've already seen this twice as issues in two where we had to make policy decisions in the middle of a project. And while a number of these other things are really important things to get done, they actually, other than the revising the creek setback, well, we call it creek setback rule, but the creek rules regarding pathways, I don't think any of them necessarily relate directly to projects where we'll be having to make a policy decision in the middle of a project. So I guess a short answer, I could support this tonight if we move the CEQA thresholds up to the higher priority. But actually, I think we're still going to end up in the middle of projects trying to make policy decisions in the middle of projects because I don't think this totally addresses all those issues. But that's the reason I pulled it.
Okay. Any other council member would like to comment on that?
I'll move that we adopt 9E. And with the exception that we would move item number 4, which is the CEQA guidelines, up into the recommended alternative, that it would be one of the higher priority items.
Second.
Are you talking about 8E?
I'm talking about 8E, but I'm talking about number 4 on.
Right. Okay. You said 9E in your motion.
Did I? So. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Adopt 8E. Yes, that is what I meant.
All right. Is there a second?
Second.
And discussion? Any? Staff, have any input?
No.
Okay. Then if there's no further discussion, we have a motion and a second. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Fellows?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Arnold?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Thank you.
To get around, to move quickly down the sidewalk. So I thought that we should look at blocking the street to traffic and so on. Now that I've seen the staff report, it looks like the staff's recommendation is option A, to eliminate parking on East Branch, close Short Street which has a lower cost to the city and to the taxpayers than closing the street off entirely. So I'm okay with option A. I did talk with Bob Lund, who was here earlier, who's the president of the Village Improvement Association. He said that they're trying to downplay it a little bit so there'll be fewer people as the years go by and make it more of a local event. But he and I had an idea. We came up together. I shared that with a little cryptic sketch that I left for the city manager. The city manager and I spoke about if traffic is moving up and down the street, but there are no cars parked along the side, you sort of remove that safety barrier of bodies of cars protecting the kids, yet it still doesn't give the folks any more space to walk on the sidewalk. So he and I came up with the idea. Actually, it was Bob's idea to move the delineators out 2 feet, say 2 feet from the curb, and then perhaps do something to calm traffic where each delineator is, put a whatever you call that little barricade or stanchion or whatever. That's an idea for a compromise. But I really don't have a problem with option A where it is. But option A doesn't really solve the problem of so many people on the sidewalk that they want to kind of push out into the street. And I think Councilman Arnold had a concern last year too. You have comments, Ed, on that?
Yeah, actually, when I heard the idea of closing off the street, I thought it was a really good one. And then when I read the staff report and it explained the costs and the concern that I had probably more was even the pushing the traffic through the neighborhood. I think, you know, I didn't consider that even though we do it on a Saturday for Harvest Festival, the impact during the work week might be greater. So my thought was that we could try it this year and see how it works with this, and then if we need to, I think, unfortunately, whether we want to try to downplay it or not, I didn't know about it the first few years, and now I do, and I know a lot of other people are the same way, and I think it is going to just be continuing to build on itself. I think, actually, the idea of maybe moving the barricades out, if that would still be a safe option, that might make some sense, and it also might make it even a little more calming with not having such a wide street. I think one of the problems, if we move all the cars off the street, we may do just the opposite of now people will feel that they can go faster. So if we do something to at least keep the lanes maybe narrow, whether we move those barricades out or we do some other kind of artificial barricades out farther so that we at least still give that illusion of, you know, slow down. But I'm open for whatever the police chief thinks is going to be the safest option here.
Yeah, I was going to say, Steve, did you have a chance to share my idea, the sketch, with Chief Annabelle?
Yeah, I can just give you a summary, and then Chief can jump in terms of specifics. But generally, we went over it, and our original intent was to try to keep the barricades or the delineators up on the curb to keep everybody on the curb, even though it is kind of crowded there. But the things we were trying to accomplish with that proposal was to remove the cars and remove children darting out behind cars and being where the kids are, and the traveling vehicles. We don't want kids walking around near traveling vehicles. So we felt that would probably be acceptable and still could accomplish what we had proposed to do.
What about the thought of where each delineator is, you have a sawhorse type, whatever you would call it, Chief Annabelle, perpendicular to the curb so that it offers a little bit of what we'll eventually have in the way of bump outs to have a visual traffic calming device. Would that work, or is that not a good idea?
We talked a little bit about how that could selectively, if we put a few of those in, I think it could help. We're concerned about, we and also had to discuss some trying to get the vehicles in closer by using cones to realign the travel lanes and things like that. Our concern was if we provide too much different type of things to slow traffic, we want the drivers, and the drivers are going pretty slow. I mean, speeding is not just due to the way the event goes. It backs up pretty well. But we want the drivers to be focusing on the children, and we don't want so much of their attention kind of looking at this and how do I get around this. And so I think we could add some of those to make sure the cars stay in the middle of the road. But at the same time, we kind of want to balance it. We don't want to make the thing so complicated that they're looking at all this stuff that they're not used to, and then instead of really focusing and looking for kids that might be running out on the street type of thing. Do you want to add to that?
Was that it?
I just have a, my concern remains that we are going to spend a couple thousand dollars on some measure with traffic, or the cars won't be parked along the side of the along the curb, but we still have the problem with a lot of people on the sidewalk. But if we move the delineators out a couple feet and try that option A with that change, see how it goes, maybe as years go on. I share the concern with Councilman Arnold that we're going to have more and more people no matter what we do, but maybe not. So that's all, Mr. Mayor. Thanks.
Well, I'm going to jump in on this. I would not support moving those delineators or the tape away from the curb line for one reason, and that is that if there is a concentration of kids in one given area, and there's kind of a surging of that the crowd along the sidewalk, if that tape is moved away from the curb, you're going to have a lot of people tripping over that curb, especially within that 2 feet area. I would just assume that it be flush with the curb so that everyone knows that that's it, that's the border. I think we're creating much more of a tripping and falling hazard by moving that away and expanding the area off of the sidewalk. I think the celebration itself is short-lived. It's tradition. I would not want to see it go away. I think we can control it with some law enforcement presence cruising up and down Brant Street. I like the fact that the parking is gone, because what we don't want is a repeat of the tragedy that we had last year. and I think having an open line of sight, both from the sidewalk to the street and the street to the sidewalk, benefits the safety factor in both directions. The other thing that I like the idea of monitoring it for a year and then seeing how we might be able to improve it next year. But I would not be in favor of moving anything away from a curb. I think you're creating much more of a hazard. You're telling the kids that it's okay to go into the street for that period of time, and that's not what we want, especially with a curb. So those are my thoughts. Anyone else have any comments? Okay. Well, this was your issue. Councilmember Fellows, did you want to make a motion?
I think since your opinion is different from mine, you need to make the motion, or somebody else does.
Okay. Does anyone want to make a motion on 8F?
Mr. Mayor, I make a motion that we approve item 8F and give leeway for the police department to do as necessary to calm traffic and possibly use some flashing warning signs and to monitor the speed on the street.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. And discussion? I'm assuming from the motion then what we're doing is we're tossing it back to you, Steve. And with regard to the delineators and the positioning of the tape, do what you think is best, being mindful of the comments that you got today. And we'll see how it goes. Okay. Any other discussion? Okay. Hearing none, roll call.
Mayor Pro Tem Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Fellows?
Yes.
Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Thank you. All right, we'll move to 9A. That's our first public hearing this evening. Consideration of a request from South County Sanitary Service for integrated solid waste collection rate increase and franchise extension. Steve.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. First of all, I want to apologize. I did not get the word to consultants. We got out the word to employees. Not to consultants on their Hawaiian shirt. Anyways, the in 1997, the city entered into a franchise agreement with South County Sanitary Service for collection, diversion, and disposal of solid waste and added recycling services in 1999. And the agreements specify procedures for rate adjustments. According to the franchise agreements, the rate review shall be conducted in accordance with the City of San Luis Obispo rate setting process and methodology manual for integrated waste management rates. And the franchise agreement allows for a base rate adjustment every 3 years and interim rate adjustments the other 2 years. And the types of costs that can be addressed in a rate increase are much more restrictive during those interim rate periods. That the proposed increase is both reasonable and allowable under the methodology manual. Now, in addition, the franchise agreement is due to expire next month, and we've received a request from South County Sanitary Service for a 15-year extension. However, staff does not believe that the request provides sufficient time for us to appropriately assess any potential community needs related to refuse collection services or to negotiate any changes in the agreements that may be deemed necessary to address those needs. So instead, at this time, staff is recommending the City Council approve a one-year extension to the agreement to provide us time to complete those items and come back to you at that time. One last item, not part of this item, but is related to it, I wanted to report to you and bring to your attention the Integrated Waste Management Authority just recently approved a recycling fee that will be a pass-through on the bills for South County Sanitary Service, and that is a 2% increase. That does not require city approval. It's authorized under the state recycling legislation, but I thought you should be aware of it because that pass-through on the bill will be implemented, I think, fairly consistently at the same time that any increase approved by the City Council will also go into effect. At this time, I would like to introduce Mr. Stadler. As I mentioned, he's the finance director with the City of San Luis Obispo, who is the expert on these rate reviews. And he has helped us and will briefly present the findings of his review.
Good evening, Mayor and Council members. I just want to assure
you. Excuse me, before you get started, Tony, could you hit that bank of lights back there, just the inside one? I think it's the inside one.
I want to begin by assuring you, had I gotten the memo, I would have dressed appropriately. And secondly, when I discussed the presentation with the staff, I told them I had a detailed, comprehensive presentation or a short one. I want you to know I wrestled with them mightily for the short one, and they finally gave in and agreed that that's the one I would give. Let's see. There we go. As Steve indicated, actually we did a joint review for four agencies, the City of Rio Grande, Grover Beach, Oceano, and the City of Pismo Beach. Why do those four agencies at the same time? It's very similar services between the agencies, very similar franchise agreements. All have adopted the same rate review methodology, and the financial information for South County Sanitary Service is closely related for each of those agencies. Brief overview of the findings. South County Sanitary Service has provided all of the documentation that they're required to provide under the city's franchise agreement with them. They provide a comprehensive level of service at very competitive rates compared with similar communities. In fact, even with the rate increase before this evening, you will have among some of the lowest rates of those agencies surveyed. And then lastly, South County Sanitary Service has done a really excellent job of managing costs and revenues. So that leaves us with a rate recommendation of approving their rate request for a 3% rate increase. In crafting the rate review scope, really the primary question is supporting documentation itself, interviews with various staff, and then rate surveys of comparable Central Coast communities. Big question, are the costs reasonable? Really looked at that from three different ways. Did a detailed review of the costs and changes by key cost components over the last 4 years. Looked at rates in comparable communities and then compared the rate increase with changes in the consumer price index. And the proposed increase of 3% compares very favorably with changes in the consumer price index during 2006 of a little over 4%. Just to put that a little bit in perspective, if you take a look, you see 75% of their costs are really driven by three key components: what the direct labor is in collection, the tipping fees, vehicle operations, and maintenance in the city's franchise fee. What's a reasonable return on those costs? Really, the rate-setting model organizes costs really into three key categories. The first is those costs for which they are allowed to earn a profit, and that's basically their core operations and maintenance costs. There's another set of costs that they're allowed to recover the cost but not earn any profit on those, and that's franchise fees and their tipping fees. And then the third category is either costs that are plain excluded from either recovering or earning profit on, or they're limited. No cost recovery for charitable and political contributions, no cost recovery for entertainment, no cost recovery for income taxes, no cost recovery for non-approved profit-sharing plans, no recovery for fines and forfeitures, and there is a limit on how much they can return in cost recovery from officer salary. So basic methodology, for those allowable costs that they're allowed to earn a profit, they're in essence allowed to earn a profit of about 8% on that. No profit on their pass-through costs of tipping fees and franchise, and, of course, no revenue recovery for excluded costs. Some key concepts, there is no retroactivity provisions in this. If in the past years, the rate-setting methodology, they didn't achieve the cost recovery they'd hoped for, well, that's too bad. They're not allowed to recover past losses. On the other hand, if they were able to do better than their operating ratio targets based on the approved methodology, then that's okay, too. That proves that they did something much more efficient and effective during that period of time. And because we reset this every 3 years, it's an opportunity to bring that back up. Again, as the city manager indicated, the model provides for a detailed base year review every 3 years and then interim changes in the next 2 years between those detailed base reviews. Basic conclusion, based on my work, their costs are reasonable. The proposed rate increase meets the reasonable return criteria in your franchise agreement. And that's going to result really in rates that are extraordinarily modest in terms of increases. 1 and 2 gallon cans, which is really the baseline of your service, about 40 to 50 cents a month in price increases, literally a penny or two a day in increased rates. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you have about the proposed rate increase.
Bill, I have a question. It's not so much related to your presentation, but Steve mentioned that the pass-through cost for recycling that IWMA put in place, what does that mean we're going to be paying for a blue bin? Is that what that means?
I think a separate fee that covers.
Is that when the fee will be levied?
No, the fee is levied on 2% of commercial gross and 30 cents per residential customer, or 30 cents per residential customer. When they go to the landfill, it is free.
Okay.
And that is by design, because that's the way the IWMA wanted it, because if they pay, then it'll end up on the side of the road.
So that's going to wind up then as a separate line item on a bill.
My bill, it's going to be a separate line item. It doesn't have anything to do with South County Sanitary. It doesn't have anything to do with the city of Arroyo Grande. It just goes to the IWMA.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions for Bill? Any questions for Steve? Okay. This is a public hearing, and if there are members of the audience who would like to come forward on 9A, this would be an opportunity for you to do so. No one? Okay. We'll close the public hearing portion of 9A and bring this back. And Councilmember Costello, why don't you start us off?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think that it's a fairly simple matter to make a decision on this. The formula has been followed. The rates increases being requested. The rate requests are within the framework and guidelines that we've set to work within. I have no problem approving the rate increase. I will say that I would follow staff's recommendation on the extension and just go for the 1 year. I think that it's appropriate that we take just a slow look at this, do 1 year extension, then take a measured look in much greater detail for a longer extension with a careful examination of it, and go forward in that direction.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Fellows.
After reading the staff report a couple of days ago, I was pretty sure that the rate increase was nominal, 50 cents, 56 cents, 69 cents, 54 cents a month. So, and after hearing Mr. Statler's report, I'm even more so in favor of it. And, of course, the one-year extension at this time rather than 15 years sounds like a good way to go. So I can support this. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Guthrie.
I too can support it. It's not only the framework, but 3% certainly not an unreasonable. This isn't going to be a particularly unreasonable burden on anyone. And I also certainly concur. Let's take a look at take a year to look at the franchise extension. So I can support it.
Okay. Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yeah, I can also support the rate increase. I was actually impressed that the reports showed that there was actually potentially a 3.2% increase and that they're only asking 3%, so I thought that was very reasonable. I also have no problem going forward with the one-year extension on the agreement. One thing I would like to mention as we go forward with negotiating the future franchise agreement is to make sure, and I think we talked about this a while back, Steve, to make sure that there isn't a penalty for extra recycling. I know that at times I've actually put out cardboard boxes and I've received a notice saying I'm not supposed to do that, and I have two blue bins and only one trash bin, and usually my trash bin's empty. And what I don't want to do is encourage our residents to have more recycling than they have trash, start putting the recycling in the trash. So I'd like to make sure that we cover that in the new agreement, but I can support this tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. I support all of the comments that have been made. Once again, I think we have to be very entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I move we adopt a resolution of the City Council of the City of Rio Grande establishing the integrated solid waste collection service rates as submitted, including the First Amendment to the solid waste franchise agreement between the City of Rio Grande and South County Sanitary Service, extending the agreement for 1 year.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Discussion?
Just a clarification, Mr. Mayor. Sorry.
Yes.
It's actually the Third Amendment. We submitted a supplemental information that retitled that amendment. So just clarifying, that's the Third Amendment.
To the third Amendment.
Okay. Motion's been clarified. Second hold.
Yep.
Any discussion? Roll call.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Fellows?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Thank you. That will take us to 9B, our second public hearing. Consideration of Development Code Amendment 06-004, amendment to the zoning map, East Village Neighborhood Plan.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. Let me get out of what is here and bring up my show. This project is not new to you, but as background, the neighborhood plan is about 22 acres in size, and it's divided into sub-areas 1 and 2. Last October, the City Council considered what we call the East Village Neighborhood Plan as part of the Cherry Creek project and determined that it was adequate in meeting the requirements of the general plan on a finding that sub-area 1 provides the necessary utilities, circulation, and infrastructure for future development of sub-area 2. Last November, Council adopted an ordinance to change the zoning of the sub-area 1 property from residential rural to single-family residential, separate from the sub-area 2 property. The intent behind separating the two sub-areas was to further review potential density impacts, site constraints, and other issues just in more detail for sub-area 2. In July of this year, Council took tentative action to approve the neighborhood plan, pending additional information regarding drainage solutions and removal of references to planned unit developments, and continued the consideration of the proposed development code amendment to change the zoning of sub-area 2. The neighborhood plan has been amended to include drainage strategies and options, which were prepared by Mark Burnett of the Natural Resources Conservation Service. The Public Works Department has reviewed the drainage strategies and concluded that all of the proposed alternatives are technically feasible. References to planned developments have also been excluded from the neighborhood plan as requested by the City Council. So tonight, Council is asked to consider a proposal to change the zoning of subarea 2 from residential rural to single-family residential, and to formally adopt the East Village neighborhood plan as amended. So here we go. Through the Development Code Amendment in January of this year, and recommended the Council amend the zoning of the property as proposed. Issues discussed during that time included constraints of the property, changing the general plan and zoning designation to a lower density while creating no net loss of residential units citywide based on state law, creating an overlay for the property to allow a lower density, and then also applying a specific plan designation to the property. Only the proposed zone change was forwarded to the Council for consideration, so they didn't forward any of those other options to you. So subarea 2, just to give you some more background as to what it's composed of, it's divided into 10 separate parcels developed with 12 residences. Two of the properties have second units on them. If the Development Code Amendment is approved, the new single-family residential zoning for the area would allow densities up to 4.5 dwelling units per acre, or that would actually equate to 45 new residences based on gross acreage. So these properties are accessed by a 15-foot wide private road. We have been commonly referring to that as Dirt Cherry. This is currently an unpaved road and is owned by many different people. Dirt Cherry will be widened to 32 feet along the subarea 1 property boundary. But it is anticipated that this road will be widened to city standards along the subarea 2 property, but only to 24 feet wide. And that's based on concerns from people that live in that area. They only want 24 feet wide, and they also do not want parking at all. So that's what staff is recommending, is 24 feet wide along the subarea 2 property. All road improvements will be the responsibility of future development. Property owners at subarea 1, they have already initiated road acquisition process for the subarea 1 portion of the Dirt Cherry. The other private access road within subarea 2 is, as we know, is Lyerly Lane, which connects perpendicular to the extension of East Cherry Avenue. Our Lyerly Lane also has a very narrow width and is considered very, very inadequate to serve future development at this time. But when it's, you know, when future subdivision occurs, Lyerly Lane will definitely be required to a minimum of 18 feet for emergency access purposes. All new residences in this area will be subject to the provisions of the Agricultural Preservation Overlay District, including a minimum of a 100-foot-wide agricultural buffer. The neighborhood plan indicates a 130-foot-wide buffer for both subareas. So, as been discussed in previous meetings, there's lots of constraints with regards to this area. Excuse me. So these constraints include the creek channel and the riparian area setback area, the agricultural buffer, and then just the existing pattern of development. There's already lots of houses that already are there, and it's hard to work around those. So therefore, it's been the newest conceptual design for the subarea 2 property and is recommending that the revised neighborhood plan be formally adopted as a planning tool for future development. As discussed in the staff report, an alternative is to require a specific plan for the project site as a method of controlling the density and ensuring that adequate infrastructure and agricultural buffer would be provided. However, history with this type of planning tool has shown that the specific plan process is cumbersome and it's very expensive. It is staff's opinion that this process is unnecessary since a neighborhood plan already exists on the property. Coordinating a more detailed specific plan with 10 separate property owners would be a long and very complicated process, so we do not recommend it. Regarding the analysis of drainage strategies and options, six alternative strategies have been proposed, with four potential options for each strategy. And this is just a summary that's on the screen. To summarize, the first strategy provides a typical subdivision layout with all of the lots sloping towards the proposed streets. These streets would then drain to East Cherry Avenue and then into the drainage facilities for the Cherry Creek project. The second strategy would address Lyerly Lane pretty much, which would grade the street to drain to the approximate middle. Drainage would then flow down the access easement toward the Cherry Creek project and into the proposed regional drainage facilities. The third strategy allows the individual lots to construct a subsurface recharge vault, which would provide a holding area for stormwater to percolate into the groundwater. Then the fourth strategy is just basically similar to strategy three, but would allow for construction of an above-ground basin somewhere on the property for each individual lot. Strategy five provides for drainage to the creek for those lots that are adjacent to the creek. And then strategy six allows lots that are adjacent to the agricultural buffer just to sheet flow to that area within the ag buffer. So all proposed strategies are technically feasible per the Public Works Department, and it is anticipated that a combination of the strategies would be utilized to do what's needed to be done. As projects are proposed, strategies available to each property will be evaluated to determine the preferred option to coordinate with adjacent properties. So this is basically an illustration of strategy one. And then this one shows what strategy two would look like. Note that drainage options will require additional information for each proposed future subdivision, such as topographic surveys and percolation testing. Drainage impacts will be addressed prior to approval of any future subdivision or any additional residential units. Proposals will need to be consistent with the East Village Neighborhood Plan, of course. Staff would also require that street improvement plans be graded to accommodate any unresolved issues that you identified this evening. You could also propose alternative zoning and direct staff to prepare a different ordinance, general plan amendment, and other land use changes to offset reduction in density, if that's your desire. And then, of course, there's always the specific plan requirement, which we do not recommend. And then finally, as always, we offer that, you know, you can provide some other direction to staff. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. And Don Spagnola was right next to me from Public Works, who can answer any specific drainage-related questions. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Kelly. Questions or clarifications on the staff report? Councilmember Fellows?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Kelly, this is a nit, but remember my question yesterday regarding the last sentence in the ag buffer explanation? Did you?
Yeah, with regards to development, where it says development, it should say new development.
Okay, thank you. And then apparently Don, staff does not have a problem with narrowing Dirt Cherry when it's finally improved or having it be 24 feet in sub area 2. Or else you would not recommend
it. No, we don't have any.
Okay, thank you. That's all, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Any other questions or clarifications? Councilmember Guthrie?
Yeah, this is for Don. It's specifically related to the drainage. Yeah, basically, when we see that, it seems like every drainage possibility out there is apparently feasible and apparently possible and recommended in this project. When I look at what we did over on the west side, and we had, remember when we used to have the basins, the real small basins that were in those homes, we've since had to go away from those because so often the basins got filled in and have actually required that they always use underground vaults. And I'm wondering why in this particular location, since we're still got single-family homes, why we're actually we're returning to that concept here is, while it's technically feasible, it's actually we've pretty much determined it to be undesirable because it's very difficult to enforce later on.
Yeah, I know that Mark did recommend that in his report. He felt that because of the soil type that that was technically feasible, and wanted to present that, even though we may not ask that they put those in when the project comes forward. He just wanted to provide the information that he was requested to do, and I think that was to give as many examples or possibilities for drainage as possible. So that was just one of them that he addressed.
I had a similar question related to using the creek, and as we know, we're very concerned about anybody dumping directly in the creek, and yet it's suggested here as a possible way to go that those homes that are adjacent to the creek would dump directly into the creek. I realize they've got all kinds of hurdles to go through with fish and game and everything, but I'm wondering why we're just because it's possible, that's why it's in there?
Well, it's in Zone B, and then so one of the strategies for drainage Zone B is to allow drainage to the creek. Again, Mark was trying to come up with strategies that he felt would be possible, and that's the direction I think he was given, and so that's the things that he reported in his report.
But the
keep in mind is his concept is for ultimately there would be a combination of these options, and so there may be a couple properties where that made more sense. That don't offer some of the opportunities that the others do. So we would work with the property owners and try to have them partner on the different options and strategies that worked best to accomplish the goals within
then,
those.
Is staff's recommendation then this evening that all of these strategies, all of these are possibilities, basically anything goes? Okay, thanks.
That the projects that come forward one, have to be consistent with those strategies. We work with them in terms of determining which are the best strategies for their particular property, and what we work with them on what opportunities they have to expand those to work with their neighboring properties. And then also, when we start to design the roads, we need to make sure that we'll look at those strategies and make sure the roads are designed and such and graded so that they accommodate those strategies within the plan.
Yeah, I just want to chime in on this. What I had in mind with the recommendation that we asked Mark Barnett to pursue this was, in fact, to essentially develop the menu that we have in front of us so that, number one, we could tell what works out there. There are a number of challenges, obviously, with the creek and geography and position of the various properties. But at least my intent in trying to move that forward was so that we would have some choices and options and some flexibility to look at these different strategies. And it would be, my assumption was always that it would be driven by the position and soil configuration of the individual properties and to the extent possible, the properties. And I think that's listed in your report, Kelly, that the extent possible that we could select an option that would work for two or more properties in a given location might be better than individual property owners looking for separate strategies. So that's putting a menu in front of us and in front of staff, I think, was my goal. Let's see, Mayor Pro Tem, you've been waiting patiently.
Thank you. To follow up that thought then, if I understand correctly, by having this menu here, we would not be approving any of these processes until a project came forward. And at that point, if we, because of either environmental issues, we could deny and say, no, you cannot use this option, mm-hmm. if I understand correctly. So,
yeah, I think two things we'd be looking at that point is, one, what they're bringing forward, is it consistent with the options that are available to them? That would be one criteria. And then, two, they would have to do initial analysis to show that it functions properly. That would be the second review, which is what you're referring to also. And then we would also look at the other alternatives and get a comfort level that we feel the alternative they're proposing is optimal in comparison with the others that are available to that particular area or sub-area or section of the sub-area.
So we still would have discretion is basically what I'm hearing. And if they said, yeah, I want to run it all to the creek, but we could say, well, there's a better alternative. And so while, yes, the creek has been stating something to the effect that this is not an entitlement by the fact that we're here having it here. And this goes back to the whole idea that if someone sells their parcel, while I think the parties that are involved right now understand, my concern is that the more information, the better. Would you have a problem or would you agree that it would probably be useful to have more information here that said that this is conceptual only?
It wouldn't hurt at all. I'm not particularly concerned with regard to that issue. In other words, you have the same control over this area and subdivision of this area that you would over any area. You have essentially an overlay. It's not an overlay. What it is hard to define because it's not defined in our code. It's what you make of it. It's a neighborhood plan. It's a concept plan. I think it is stated in the document that it's a concept plan. But if you feel that more a language of that nature, just to make sure that it's clear cut to anyone, that this is a concept plan subject to, you know, refinement and subject to real subdivisions, then that wouldn't hurt. But, again, I'm not overly concerned that this would be construed, nor would it raise any sort of cause of action in a third party if they did rely on it to that extent. You have the same control over subdivision of this area than you have over every area. This was just, to me, a concept plan, one idea. If this is the idea that you like, then when these projects come in, then you'll approve them or modify them however you feel it's appropriate.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Councilmember Costello?
Just one question. I understand that this is a menu of different options that might be out there, but is it possible with the concept, the way the lots are laid out now, that there might be some options that are better and more environmentally sound that depend on neighboring pieces of property being developed the same way? Are we going to see where someone may come forward and develop an interior lot in such a way that it's going to preclude some of these options of being available to the other lots?
Well, I think that's why it was developed in the way it was. There's a number of options and strategies for all the circumstances, so I don't think anything is going to take place that eliminates all those options to any particular property. And there may be, I think maybe you're also alluding to the fact that there may come forward another option which isn't laid out here that they would maybe want to have access to. And this certainly doesn't preclude us from considering options that are deemed optimal above what we've laid out there.
So we're not handcuffed by this?
Yeah, not at all.
Thank you. Any other questions or clarifications? This is a public hearing, and at this time I'd like to invite any member of the public who would like to come forward and comment on 9B. This would be an opportunity for you to do so. Would ask that you please be mindful of the three-minute rule. Please address the council as a whole.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and council members. Mark Vasquez. I've been acting as a agent for the neighbors in the area. I don't have much to add to the staff report that Kelly's given and the discussion that you've had. Other than I know you've had concerns regarding the drainage and that, and I think after reviewing the information that Mark Barnett put together, not cast in stone, some of them may or may not be approved, as was mentioned. So I think that it kind of gives a well-rounded discussion for anybody looking at development. It seems to make sense to me for the area, and I could see a number of things happening as individual properties develop or potentially adjoining properties get together and combine some of those ideas. So I think it allows a lot of flexibility, which is good for an area of mixed ownership like this. So I would say we've been here. I think we've gone over most of the issues, and I haven't heard anything here tonight that I have great concern over to voice an opinion one way or the other. So I would hope that we could move to conclude this effort tonight. And I thank you all for your time and your
dedication to this. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else who would like to come forward on 9B?
Hello, my name is Damien Mavis. I'm one of the developers of Sudbury One. I'd just like to be real brief and say that all these drainage plans I had a chance to take a look at and certainly dovetail just fine with everything we're planning in Sudbury One. And I certainly think it shows that it's that there's several technically feasible drainage alternatives for each lot, which I think is a great idea and gives some latitude to each lot owner as to how they develop in the future. I certainly think taking a step back on a broader view that what's being proposed tonight is a logical next step in this whole neighborhood plan process. And we've been at it for quite a while, and I really think that it's kind of all coming together under the original premise of a neighborhood plan, which was collaboration. So I think certainly it works with from our standpoint at Sudbury One, and I think it is true to the idea of the collaboration in the basic premise of the neighborhood plan. So I think it looks good to me. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else?
Folks, Rule Estes, Adelaide East Cherry, Subarea B. I'm probably not going to say anything you haven't already heard. Maybe rephrase it a little bit. I still consider the farm buffer as being a criminal act. You're stealing my property. I think it's a personal attack against me. I think it's a personal attack against the people in Subarea A. You've stolen their property. By working with this and dragging this on so long, you've stolen literally hundreds, if not thousands, of man hours. You have coerced the folks of Subarea B into spending overlay, and I checked with your staff. You haven't informed all the people that this farm buffer affects of what that's actually doing to their property and how they can lose some of their use. We have put together a neighborhood plan. As I said, at your behest, I'd like to see Tony be able to do his house on the corner of Lyerly and Cherry, quit dragging him out there and costing him money. I'd like you to see Unit A be allowed to build, get it done, and I'd like this over and done with. This is, quite frankly, the most ridiculous waste of people's times I've ever seen. Mike Miner said that he had problems with Morro Bay, and he thought you folks were really nice. You can imagine my feelings toward them if I were out there talking to them then. I think collectively and individually you're some fairly intelligent folks, but you keep sticking your finger in it when you've got more than $1 million sitting there and the ability to give you advice and then you don't take it because you've got an agenda of your own. I think enough of this. Let's start taking care of the rest of the people and not just who you think should be taken care of.
Okay, thank you for your comments. Anyone else?
Good evening, councilman, staff. My name is Tony Janowitz, and I reside at 447 Lyerly Lane, right in the middle of Subarea 2. I realize that this project has gone on for quite a while, and everybody has their own ideas about how the property should continue on and either be split or not split or be developed or not be developed. I just want to say that I think that we as a group have worked on this property and tried to foresee all the advantages and disadvantages that could happen if this property does rezone. I think we have come up with a very good plan, and I appreciate all the time that you, the staff, council, planning commission has put towards trying to figure out this property. It will be a good project for the city, and I just appreciate the time that you all have put towards it. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Going once, going twice. We'll close the public hearing portion of 9B and bring this back to the council. And why don't we start with Council Member Guthrie?
I think as I've expressed in the past, I just continue to have real concerns about whether we'll ever see the vegetated farm buffer that we expected to see as part of sub-area 2. But what is really the best, most coordinated direction for the drainage here? I think that we've seen in the past that individual surface basins have been undesirable in other locations. They would be just as undesirable here. Technically, yes, you could probably find a way to deny it. But in reality, we would be faced with a project coming forward where that would be the request and their neighbors not ready to develop, and so therefore that's all that they could do. So the other deal is the recommendation, or including the recommendation, that you could actually dump directly into the creek here. I don't think that's a desirable direction, even if it was feasible, even if you got through all of the development or all of the permitting process, that in reality that's not something that we want to encourage. So I'd be prepared to support this evening if we eliminate those two. In reality, I think the two being that we would not allow surface basins in this area, and that we would not allow anyone to dump directly into the creek except by using a coordinated plan that used the planned outfall in sub-area 1. In reality, we really should pick what is the best drainage plan and require that. But I'm willing to compromise and sort of meet halfway here, that if we eliminate the worst pots, particularly the ones that are most likely to make it impossible to have a coordinated plan. I think council, one of the other council members pointed out that in fact putting a surface basin on a couple of these would eliminate the possibility of ever having a coordinated plan. And if those were the lots that came forward first, and particularly if they then didn't have to contribute to developing that coordinated plan, then it wouldn't happen. So I'd be prepared this evening if we eliminated the two. If you want to allow underground surface fault, at least it's not something we'll have trouble going back in the future and controlling whether they don't just get filled in, which has happened in the past. Sheet flowing onto the ag buffer certainly is a big plausible plan that I could support, because it's because there is some control of the ag buffer, at least in how it would ultimately be used. So we wouldn't have to worry that somebody would then fill in the basin. I would even support a coordinated single basin for the area. But I can't support these piecemeal decisions that every single property is going to do what's going to work for them today, when they, in fact, will preclude possibilities for the coordinated development in the future. So with those two changes, I could support going forward this evening. But without those two changes, I won't be able to support it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Councilmember Guthrie has just voiced some of the concerns that I've got. I think if allowed to go forward with this menu of potential options there for drainage, we're at the risk of some of them being just not being practical or possible because of piecemeal development going on that will preclude reasonable options. I'd like to have a recommended best option myself. I don't see one here in what I see before us. So I don't know if we can come up with one tonight. We probably can't come up with what would be the recommended option for all the different property owners to comply with. That said, perhaps his suggestions to eliminate the least desirable ones, the ones that might cause the most problems, is a sound along the lines of what Mr. Guthrie is recommending. I'm just not completely sure which options are the ones that need to be removed to make sure that the proper ones stay.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Fellows.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think definitely we need to do this tonight. It's gone on for a long, long time. I'm right exactly where Councilman Guthrie is as far as the drainage plan. I think it's to the benefit of the folks that develop later and buy these properties later to have the most direction they possibly can have. I think sheet flow directly to the creek should be eliminated from the list, or in the very least have the options listed in order of desirability with sheet flow directly to the creek at the very bottom of the list and surface basins right above that, so not very desirable either, or get rid of them, make it definite. I think the other thing that's important was brought up by Councilman Arnold, and that is if it isn't really spelled out pretty well with some language that the city attorney could add, something to the effect that this is a concept plan and should not be relied on by potential buyers, so on and so on. That would make the process easier. The Planning Commission later on down the road, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, won't be faced with the decision of, well, somebody thinks that they can actually follow those lines and so on, and that would streamline the process. As far as the rest of what we have before us, the quit claim process and the papers appear to me to be in order. I'm glad it's there. I'm glad we have a way of clearing up the ownership of Dirt Cherry without really going beyond clearing up the ownership until the improvements are done, or until the improvements are done, I think is the way it's worded. I think the 24 foot wide Dirt Cherry through Siberia 2 is a good idea, if it pleases the folks that are owners there, that's good too. But I think it's a way to calm the traffic and have less disturbance around the farmland and so on. I do appreciate the fact that the Natural Resources Conservation Service, Mr. Barnett, has been brought in to list the options. I just think that leaving all the options on the table on the paper is not a good idea. And the East Village neighborhood plan edits that we've seen before us in the plan have been made with good judgment, and they seem to all be there. So if it looks okay to the rest of the folks, I'd like to see us do this tonight, and with the clarifications mentioned first by Councilman Guthrie and Councilman Arnold. Thank you.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem.
Mr. Mayor. I can support this tonight. I think a lot of effort has gone into this with the neighborhood and with staff and with all the bodies as well. I will require for my approval that we do modify the list of available drainage options to basically eliminate individual creek drainage options and individual surface basins. I don't have a problem if there is some consolidation with using both of those options, but I definitely don't think that either one of those on an individual basis makes much sense. And then I also will want to see extra text added to the conceptual plan stating the fact that this is not a guarantee.
Be graded back towards the creek as opposed to bringing it to the street?
Yeah, and that was my understanding of it as well. I guess I have just a bit of a different take here, and that is that, moving forward tonight is something that I would really like to do, but I'm a little bit hesitant about restricting those two options. I would have no problem deprioritizing them. I would have no problem stating something to the effect that this would be our final option, not our preference. But to completely eliminate them, I think, ties the hands of staff in some of those areas where there may not be another option. So that would be my only concern about eliminating them. As far as sheet runoff into the creek, I don't think that's what's being proposed. I think what's being proposed is some form of a formal drainage where you have a pipe that comes out of the bank of the creek and dumps directly into the bed of the creek, not something that's going to wash into it. So that's my only concern about completely eliminating them. We may find out down the road that there is no other option for a certain piece of property. So I would not have a problem this evening making a statement to the effect that, surface basin drainage and drainage into the creek for individual properties is not desirable and would be our last option if nothing else works, something to that effect. But to completely take it out of the picture, particularly for that one area of subarea 2, there may not be another option. I do agree that there might be some merit in coming forth and having Don, having some of your folks take a look at these options and see what can be proposed in the form of a suggested course of action, and to look at some of those problematic lots right now, take what Mark has prepared and come up with, obviously there's concern on the council, come up with some perhaps alternatives that might work there. But at the same time, and then maybe you come back to us and at some point and say, look, there is no other option. So, I mean, that was the whole purpose of developing the menu, not so much for the property owners per se, but for staff to take a look at and to consider. So I think also one of the higher priorities as far as drainage should be the degree to which integration could occur with subarea 1. I think that's a desired effect to implement as much as we possibly can. Those are my thoughts. I'm uneasy with taking them completely off the board, but I have no problem at all with saying this is an absolute last resort if nothing else works. I'd be interested in some feedback here.
Mr. Mayor, I think my thought was when I say no individual lots, I guess what I'm looking at is if we want to use the minor property as an example, not go with maybe the easiest, which is to run, one. Or, again, with the surface basin, you wouldn't just do a surface basin. And I don't think in any scenario that a surface basin is available that a vault would not also be an option. And I know I came from a neighborhood in Arizona where they did – they had the front yard basins on small lots, and when we put our pools in, we filled them in. That's just completely unenforceable. So in my imagination, I guess what I'm looking at is if we do these surface basins on individual lots, we'll lose them eventually, and we'll probably get sheet flow into the creek. And so the more we can do right now to say that is not an available option, then an alternative will come up.
Okay, let me make sure we understand each other then. What you're saying is that if we were, if this property owner down here, which has several lots, if it was determined that the topography for that particular property owner would not accommodate flow or drainage in another direction, that a consolidated strategy that might include a proper piping into the creek for all of those properties is something that would be acceptable if there was no other option. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
What about you, Councilmember Guthrie?
No, actually, I think I would seize on, two things. One, I want to ask a real quick question based on your comments. Based on the mayor's comments, are you now saying that the two plans that would totally coordinate the drainage and take all the drainage over to subarea 1's drainage, either through the street or through pipes, that's not feasible for these three lots on the side?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that
it would be feasible to coordinate them all. So these guys aren't ever going to be eliminated the possibility of development. They have a way to do it. It just wouldn't be as simple as it might be otherwise.
Right. They'd have to bring in some dirt and regrade the lot so that the back is higher than the front to drain it out to the street.
Okay. Well, just like we required that they grade the Pace property, that they grade that to go to the street.
Right.
Hang on just a second. I'm going to ask Mark to come back up and comment on that since this is an important issue.
Okay. In regards to those three pieces over on the lower right side there, that portion there currently exists, it's down from all the rest of the properties. And even if you were to, say, come from the cul-de-sac up on the miner's property and run the water underground in a pipe, and come back and try to pick up the drainage through subarea 1, those properties would be too low to connect into that.
So are you telling us that in reality the work done by the drainage isn't feasible?
No, I'm telling you all the other properties could drain that way. That particular corner down there is low enough that you could not connect it into a drainage system and have it flow to the west.
Right. So in reality, the first two plans that were proposed are not feasible for subarea 2 because some of the properties can't participate. That's what you're telling us.
No, I don't think so. I don't have the drawings here in front of me right at the moment, but I think that's why that particular property showed that there could be a drainage outlet to the creek because it is low. It's lower than anything else out there. It's down in a well. So it doesn't have a lot of choices, that one particular property. But miners could run, as an example, they could run a pipe down the street. It would just be too hot. That is the one place that has a problem because of its unique characteristics.
Thanks. And that was the reason why I was a little bit hesitant of taking that one option completely off the board, was specifically for the Caldwell property. I think we can get most of the way there with your concerns on the, you know, the other two issues, except for that one corner. So that's, I don't know, do you want to chime in on that, Steve? Or?
Well, just to emphasize that, you know, in the review of these projects, the city is going to have the ultimate authority. So for much of this list is really a toolbox for staff to sit down with these projects and walk through and determine on each one which is going to work best with them, looking at their property and look at opportunities to coordinate with the other properties. So I think we had always perceived this was going to be a little bit of a mishmash of a number of solutions for different properties as they go forward. So I think it's to our benefit to have all the options in the toolbox available to us, because we just really don't know all the constraints and all the things we're going to be dealing with when we start working with these properties.
What we don't have in front of us right now, obviously, are thorough drainage engineering studies and all of that would come along with the specific projects. So I think that's why I'm a little reluctant to get finite with a recommendation here until we have something a little more defining in front of us. But once again, I would not be opposed to stating that our strong preference is to eliminate these two options wherever and whenever possible. But again, what's looming large in my mind is the Caldwell property and the uniqueness of that.
I guess where I would go with that, if it turns out that the Caldwell property can't be developed any other way, then let's have that piece of it come back. But in reality, I think if we tell them that we're going to let them dump into the creek or that we're going to let them have surface, individual surface basins, really any surface basins, that's what's going to happen because they're going to try to develop individually. And I understand that technically, yes, we could deny them. It's going to be very difficult to tell a property owner that he can't develop his property because his neighbor's not ready to go. And that's exactly the problem we've had in the past. And the whole point to me of having a coordinated plan is to coordinate it. And, yes, it's not as coordinated as I would like. I will say one of these plans doesn't show anything going off into the creek on that side. So at least if it's feasible, then it certainly seems reasonable that maybe that's the only one we should choose. But I think we should eliminate any shot into the creek. And if it turns out that that is, in fact, impossible, that, in fact, these drawings aren't accurate, then, in fact, they would come back with an alternative plan. But I do think it's real dangerous to give the impression that, well, this is okay if it's the least desirable, but if you can't do it any other way, we're going to permit it.
Because that'll be the first thing that comes before us. It happens all the time.
Yeah, and we've seen it many times. So that's my position. I wouldn't support it unless we eliminate those two options.
Okay. Any other comments? All right. If there are no other comments, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I'll make the motion, but I do want to get a clarification. Tim, I would read the...
Yes. Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Fellows?
Yes.
Mayor Farrar?
Yes.
All right. And then I'd also like to propose a resolution of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande approving the East Village Neighborhood Plan case number 04-001, for approximately 22 acres located east of Noguera Court Subdivision, north of East Cherry Avenue Extension, and south of Arroyo Grande Creek. Applicant Creekside Estates, Arroyo Grande LLC. Is that right? That doesn't sound right. Yeah? That's good? Okay. And then I'd like to make the amendments that to the attachment 3 map that we add that this is a conceptual plan and that there is no guarantee that the layout depicted can or will be approved. And I'd like to basically leave you some discretion, Tim, to create – I think you understand what I'm going for, is to make this very binding and also very informative, that this is conceptual only and that for no one is to rely on this as to number the number of lots depicted or the layout of those lots. And then I'd also like to modify the drainage to eliminate individual lots draining to the creek or using surface basins, and that's for individual new lots, not as the lots currently exist, and for any other use of those two options to place them as the lowest priority that the city would use for drainage in the area.
Okay, we have a motion. Is there a second?
Could you repeat the last part of it?
Basically, what I'm getting at for that is to eliminate individual lots, new lots, not the current ownership lots. So basically, if the Cadwell property were to develop into 3 lots, they would have to consolidate those 3 lots to drain to the creek. They could not individually drain 3 lots to the creek. And also for surface basins, the same rule would apply, that they would have to do some consolidation of surface basins for new lots. So therefore, of the new lots that are going to be created, they each could not have an individual surface basin. And in any other situation where we would use drainage to the creek or surface basins, they are still the lowest priority on the list of options.
I'll second that for discussion. I want to know what Councilman.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Is there discussion? Go ahead.
In my opinion, I still wouldn't support it because it still allows there are two reasons not to allow surfaces. One, it isn't clear what coordination is. Is coordination that two lots get together and have some sort of a shared basin? The second is that actually basins are undesirable in this area because we actually want the water in the creek. But we want the water in the creek with as few accesses to the creek as possible. So I still wouldn't support it. I understand exactly where you're going, that you're trying to keep the option open that we would have fewer accesses to the creek. But it may very well be that the minor property wants to take and on the back half do one access there for those 3 lots, and on the I'm calling that the back half being the one nearest branch, or and then onto the creek do another one there, and then the Caldwell. So you could easily end up with 3 direct creek access.
For other properties, with the exception of the Caldwell property, because of its unique situation, would that help at all?
Well, if you specify to the Caldwell property, I could support that, but you're really talking about then one more creek access.
Talking about one more potential creek access.
Are we going to eliminate surface basins completely? Doesn't address my other issue. But
the issue that I have with that is if we're saying none, i.e., that would preclude the neighborhood doing one large one if they chose to. I can't imagine why they would do that versus running. Okay.
Then I would support the other side of that. If you want to include as possibilities that a second direct access to the creek for the Caldwell factory or a single basin for the entire neighborhood, I could support that as well. I actually don't think that based on our drainage plan that a single retention basin is a good idea because we actually do want the water in the creek. We don't want to hold it back. We want to put it in the creek as soon as possible, unless it's a detention basin.
Well, and I think the detention aspect of it is what was brought out in the report to the extent that we would benefit from the groundwater recharge,
You're talking about a single detention basin for the entire neighborhood. Yeah, I could support that if that's what the language is. That's not actually what you said. You just said there's some coordination between the lots.
All right. Other discussion?
I'm going to withdraw my second then. because I still feel, as Jim does, that we're leaving it open to what we've been trying to eliminate as far as siltation and pollutants and so on.
As far as what?
As far as, unless I'm misunderstanding what it means by draining to the creek, we had a problem on the end of Whiteley where they said we're going to drain our lot to this drop inlet. It's going to go straight into the creek, and that's not what I think we. I don't think we want that. I don't think you do. I certainly don't. So when you talk about draining to the creek, you're talking about not putting it through the soil. You're talking about going into a pipe and right into the creek, or with fossil filters, or what?
Well, first of all, I think the whole point here is that we're not actually designing anything right now. This is something that staff is going to. And so I think what I was trying to do was give staff a little bit of room to work, and I don't anticipate that they're going to say, yeah, just let it run right into the creek unfiltered. And I also was trying to find some middle ground to where we didn't just say we're saying as a council it's totally acceptable if every individual lot wants to run the water to the creek or do a surface test. I was trying to give some, I guess, firm. I was trying to find a common ground for everybody. I don't think I can find it for you unless I restrict everything, which I think that precludes the mayor then from.
Well, I personally appreciate your motion, Mayor Pro Tem, and if the second is withdrawn, I'll second it. We have creek protection policies that our staff does not take lightly, and whatever we do out of necessity for the Caldwell property to ensure that there is safe and adequate drainage, I think is going to move forward in a responsible way. I don't see any abuses that we would intentionally word on the part of the Caldwells that it's that we're going to pay close attention to it and make sure that it's done the right way. That's what we've always done. So if the second is withdrawn, then I will second the Mayor Pro Tem's motion. Any other discussion?
Just a bit. With regard to the proposed language, I can insert it now, at least read some that may be satisfactory. If not, would like that section. This has to actually be approved by you in its final format. So I'd bring it back with the final action on the development code amendment. Or, again, we can go ahead and do it now. It shouldn't be very difficult.
If you have some language that you think works, then if you want to read it.
Read it, and then we can just put it in.
Yeah.
That way you can move on. It would go in three places. I don't mean to overdo this. First, on page 2 of the neighborhood plan itself, in the list of attachments, we will cleverly call attachment 3 conceptual neighborhood plan, adding the word conceptual. On page 5, where the attachment 3 is actually mentioned, it's a footnote on the bottom of page 4, SF concept layout. That footnote will now read this. The attached Sub-Area 2 concept plan for SF zoning, see attachment number 3, is intended only as an illustration of one of many possible development configurations and densities for Sub-Area 2 based on lot size and area constraints. And then it goes on to say what it says about the densities. I can go on. I think that's probably adequate. I can go on and reiterate that if you think it's necessary.
No, I think we're getting there, so that I'll accept that. That sounds good.
That's a pretty big red flag for anyone trying to rely on it. And then on attachment 3 itself, we'll just relabel it East Village Neighborhood Conceptual Plan. And I think it's pretty clear cut, that in conjunction with several other statements, that it's a concept plan.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Any other discussion? Okay. If not, we have a motion and a second. Roll call.
Mayor Pro Tem Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Ferrara?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
No.
And Councilmember Fellows?
No.
Okay. How's everyone doing as far as endurance?
Could use 5 minutes.
Okay, let's do this. Let's go ahead and take a 5-minute break, and then we'll come back with 11A. Meeting over to Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. All right, Steve.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Mayor Pro Tem and Vice Chair of the agency, and members of the City Council and members of the Redevelopment Agency Board of Directors. With the agency Board of Directors' consent and direction, staff has completed negotiations with NKT Commercial for purchase of the residential portion of the mixed-use project property at the southwest corner of East Grand and Cortland Street. In turn, NKT Commercial is in the process of completing their negotiations for purchase of the entire property from S&S Homes and Ruth Day. Now, this consolidation of ownership of these parcels is now going to enable a very important economic development project to the city to proceed. However, the developer has been unable to put together a feasible proposal to develop the rental units on the residential portion of the project as is specified in the current specific plan for those properties. As a result, staff at this time is recommending that the rear portion of the property, or the approximately, I think it's 2.4 acres, be acquired by the redevelopment agency at this time for the purpose of facilitating an affordable rental unit project on that portion of the property. Now, acquisition would be funded from redevelopment housing set-aside funds that are available from the recent redevelopment agency bond financing. And once acquired, the agency would then pursue proposals for a project for development of, once again, low and very low-income rental apartments. Now, attached for your consideration is a purchase agreement that was drafted by the Redevelopment Agency's Special Counsel, and staff recommends that the Redevelopment Board of Agencies approve the agreement and also take action to appropriate $1.48 million from the Affordable Housing Set-Aside Fund. Now, to execute the agreement, there's three things contingent upon execution of the agreement. The first would be for NKT Commercial to complete their purchase of the property of both parcels from S&S Homes and Ruth Day. Second would be to prepare an appraisal that found that the value of the property is either equal to or exceeds the cost that's been negotiated with the redevelopment agency for purchase of the property. And lastly, the city council would need to approve a parcel map designating the residential portion of this property as a separate legal parcel. So in summary, we believe that this is a great opportunity for the redevelopment agency to both help facilitate movies. It doesn't change the square footage or dollar amounts or anything else in the agreement, but we would ask if you, or we recommend when you move forward to approve this, to refer to including both the APN number and the exhibit in the agreement that's approved. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have. Or
are there any questions? Councilman Casello.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Steve, if I understand correctly.
Got me now? Thank you. If I understand this correctly, the proposal is that we would purchase this land, and in effect we would go into partnership with someone like People Self-Help Housing to have them produce the low-income units. What would happen if we, you know, if that fell through? We didn't find someone to partner with.
Well, there's a number of developers out there. What we, the kind of the course we're taking right now is we would submit RFPs or release RFPs and solicit proposals from affordable housing developers. And we're pretty confident there's enough out there that would be some interest. I think the question would be how much subsidy they would be looking for, because these projects are very highly subsidized to get this number of low and very low-income units. Although when we analyze this particular property, and I don't have all the numbers off the top of my head, but when looking at subsidy per unit compared to what we could do in some smaller projects that we've looked at where we might be subsidizing one or two homes, in a project like this, even though it's a big dollar amount, the subsidy per unit was much less. So we think it's an effective use of redevelopment agency
funds. We end up with a much better benefit to the city. Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Steve, I have one. It's just kind of follow up on the last one, and I'm looking at the restrictions as well. Let's say we go out and we have public comment and the entire neighborhood comes up in arms and such, and this is looking less feasible. Do we have an option then to sell the land, and because it was bought with redevelopment funds, do we have some issues with prevailing wages kicking in, or once we sell it for a different use, because we bought it for a specific use?
If we sold it for a different use, we'd have to repay all that money to the Affordable Housing Fund. So that would be the major restriction. If you wanted to sell it for, let's say, market rate housing, you'd have to ensure... you'd have to sell it for the appraised value. Otherwise, in that project would be subject to prevailing wage. And at the same time, once again, you'd need to get all the money back from the purchase because you'd need to reimburse the Affordable Housing Fund unless it was being used for an affordable housing project. But it doesn't completely restrict you. If something doesn't work out, you can move forward with other options. You have to pay the money back, and if there's a time period, we probably have to compute some kind of interest just to show that the agency wasn't subsidizing that particular project.
And does the entire project need to be market or low and very low, or can any of it be market rate units?
There can be a
profit generated. There's more money coming out of it than went into it. Or if we sold it at the money it took to pay back the Affordable Housing Fund, would the different, because there's a, you know, because in a sense we're now contributing to the project, would that kick in prevailing wage, which is what I thought he was asking, was what happens if we make, if later on we resell the, mm-hmm. the land, what would require, would that then require prevailing wage kicking in?
If you sell it for a project, and it gets really complicated because there's some things that we don't even understand as far as affordable housing projects aren't all subject to preliminary prevailing wage. And so we don't quite understand all the things that trigger that. But let's say it's just a straightforward project that any kind of assistance would trigger prevailing wage. If you had the property for a while and the value went up, increased, and you wanted to go back and sell it for the original price to help them out because it's not any money out of our pocket, you would legally still have to sell it at the appraised value. We were already running into the same issue on Faith Street. The appraisal we did after we bought it came in a little higher, and so we're having to negotiate a purchase where they purchased at the higher price. Now, we're using that extra money to invest in some other improvements that may not trigger prevailing wage. So there's always options and things you can do to assist, but it gets kind of complicated. But yeah, the appraised value of the property is the market rate of the value of the property is what you need to sell it for to prevent prevailing wage requirements.
Any other questions? All right, this is not a public item, but as typical, we will open it to the public. Any members?
finding as I get older, my memory tends to fail me, and I just would like some clarification. My name's Tim Brown, 125 Allen Street. It's 2.4 acres is the desired purchase, and based on the specific plan, is it all rental units, partial rental units? What's the makeup or the prior, at least previously on the specific plan? That's one question I had.
Okay, if you want to ask all the questions, and then we can try to get you answers.
Okay, that's one thing. Second is on the rental property, what are you going to do to maintain it as rental property? And I hate to use this phrase, but in perpetuity, what are you going to do to keep it rental over its lifetime? Thirdly, are you using Proposition 1C money? Because I think that's something that keeps popping up, and if you do, that's a prevailing wage almost automatically. So I wanted to have those questions answered if I could. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Comments? All right, we'll close public hearing. Steve, if you could answer those. I think I know the answer, but if you could go over them.
As far as the residential units, they are all designated as rental. And once again, that's only about a third of the overall property. The remainder of the property, there was office in the middle and then commercial on the frontage. But the portion we would be acquiring is just the residential portion, and that was all designated as residential units. Rental units, I'm sorry. And then, I was going to ask you, 56 is the maximum number of units. Not necessarily that number would be developed, but 56 would be the maximum units, all rental.
What about the 1C money?
1C money, we're not using at this point. We have sufficient money within the Redevelopment Agency housing set-aside funds, functions on the property that would require it to be maintained. For within the redevelopment area and rentals, it actually triggers a 55-year requirement for it to be maintained as affordable housing. Do you have anything you want to add to that?
All right. We're going to open it up for discussion here amongst ourselves, but are we looking for a recommendation then tonight or just discussion?
We are pursuing or we're recommending your approval of the purchase agreement and also the acquisition of $1.48 million from the Affordable Housing Set-Aside Fund.
Okay, thank you. All right, Councilman Guthrie or Costello, do you want to go first? I keep looking.
Sure, I'll be glad to kick it off. I have no problem supporting what I see before us tonight. I think that this is a very positive way for us to facilitate, one, the commercial development that we've been waiting for, and then secondly also get a nice size chunk of affordable housing rental units in the city that's very difficult to get. One disadvantage, I think, is pointed out in the staff report here, is that at this time we haven't had a lot of opportunity for neighborhood input or public input, but there will be ample opportunity for that to happen when we do come forward with a specific project, which we don't have as yet. So with that in mind and understanding that we will have ample opportunity for public comment to come forward with it, I can support going forward with what we're doing here. I think it's a good investment of our dollars to get some affordable housing in the community.
Thank you. Councilman Fellows?
Thank you. I'm optimistic that we can, that the staff can find a partner or somebody like a group like People's Self-Help Housing to do the project. I'd really be happy to see that corner, that really prime Grand Avenue area develop out. And I think it's a good thing to do as far as affordable housing, so I'm all for it.
Thank you. Councilman Guthrie?
Yeah, I could support it as well. I do have one quick question. Are there two motions then somewhere? Okay. When we get ready. I didn't want to.
Yes, two motions, one on the appropriation and one on the contract itself.
All right, thank you. I, too, can support this. I think most of us up here have been pretty supportive of keeping that property as a rental property, and it's made it very difficult at times because most of the buyers the potential buyers for those two properties have wanted to do for sale units, and it's been very difficult. So I think it's important that the city take the lead here
and do, since we've insisted that this remain as rental property, since it is very difficult to have these type of properties in the city. So I can definitely support this. I think we will, as in typically is in larger projects, we will probably get more affordable units for our dollars than if we were looking at smaller properties. So I can definitely support. Thank you. Is there anyone who'd like to make a motion?
Yeah, since there's not a formal motion, I'll just move that we direct that we. Is it
11A recommendation.
So it is recommended by the reading one to approve the vacant land purchase agreement. Is that okay? I was looking for a more formal thing. Okay, then I would move that we approve the vacant land purchase agreement and joint escrow instructions for a portion of the vacant property at this.
Yes. Board Member Costello.
Yes.
Board Member Fellows.
Yes.
And Vice Chair Arnold.
Yes. Now we'll turn it back over to the mayor, who does a much better job than I do here. Yeah. I have a feeling you're not going to go out of town now, are you?
You did fine. All right, that takes us to item 12, city council member items. The agenda indicates that we have none. Item 13, city manager items. Anything this evening, Steve?
No, thank you.
Item 14 is council communications. Any correspondence or comments on the part of the council?
Just want to thank everyone for their participation in the Harvest Festival. I thought it went excellent.
Okay, staff communications?
No, sir.
Okay. Item 16, community comments and suggestions. Final opportunity for any member of the public to come up with any suggestions, thoughts, issues on any item, whether it's on the agenda or not. Any takers this evening? Mr. Ross? No? That'll take us to item 17, adjournment.
So moved.
Okay, we are adjourned. Thank you very much.